At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Man at Arms, and you are listening to the Masters of Grayskull.
Thank you, Mr. Gary Chalk, as Man at Arms from the 2002 He-Man and the Masters Universe cartoon series for giving us that promo. I'm, of course, TFG, and Mike joining me is Optimus Solo. Hello, sir.
Hello.
We just want to put this at the beginning of every episode for Masters of Grayskull. We dedicate every single episode of this to the memory of Dean Stephan. Dean, who is the writer, story editor, all that kind of stuff on the 2002 He-Man series, passed away May 15th of 2018. And not only are we doing this because we're finishing our Powers of Grayskull series podcast, we're also, I feel at this point, doing this in the memory of him because the stories that he helped create and build for this series, it revitalized the MOTU franchise, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's unfortunate that we didn't have a chance to ever talk to him before the show, but we can at least remember him as we move forward.
Absolutely. And now, on with the show.
I am Adam, Prince of Eternia, defender of the secrets of Castle Grayskull. This is Cringer, my fearless friend. Fabulous.
Hello, this is Optimus Solo, and welcome to the 115th chapter in our Powers of Grayskull series. With me for this journey into the Masters of the Universe franchise is TFG1 Mike. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Are you ready for your another return trip to Eternia?
Of course.
Always?
At least in this series case.
Excellent. Yeah, that's good. In this episode of Masters of Grayskull, we'll be giving you our thoughts on the next three episodes of the series: episode 22, which is entitled The Island, episode 23, The Sweet Smell of Victory, no pun intended, and episode 24, Separation. So we hope you're ready, because it's time to go back to Eternia.
Oh, there's a pun intended there.
Catch more fish than you!
In your dreams.
Yep, all this sunshine's quite a change from the old days. Used to be a day worker down in the Spalean mines. Now, how about you?
Teacher at Arms, Eternian Kingdom.
No kidding. You ever meet King Randor?
Used to call him Randy back when he was a cadet. He and Duncan were my favorites.
This kid, Duncan, he ever amount to much?
Might say that. He heads up the Masters of the Universe.
You don't mean Man at Arms?
Mm-hmm. Gotta get ready, fry a few of these up. He's coming for a visit.
Man at Arms coming here? My cousin Clawful's boss would be mighty interested in that information.
So, why don't you give him a call?
First up today is episode 22, entitled The Island, air date April 5th, 2003, written by Dean Stephan. And on Orcas Island, Decker, the former teacher to Man-at-Arms, is looking forward to a visit from his former pupil. News of the meeting does not go unheard, however, and Decker is captured by the member of Clawful's species. So we have a little backstory episode here with the teacher of Man-at-Arms. What did you think of this one?
I like this one. I thought it was interesting. I know I've heard Decker's voice before, not necessarily that I can remember. where from, but it's a voice that I think I know. I think it's interesting that, again, you're using the mythos, you're using the characters the way they should be used, and the fact that you don't have to rely on Skeletor doing every little damn thing. Yeah. I mean, technically, I guess in the background, Skeletor was supposed to be in this episode, because Clawful's cousin or brother or whatever the hell, you know, it was like, oh, my blah, blah, blah works for this guy, and, you know.
Right.
You know, so I guess technically Skeletor is at, not necessarily the heart of this, but he's on the ass end of it anyway. But for the majority of the episode, it's the Krabs versus the Masters.
Yeah, that is true. Just so you're aware, Decker is voiced by Blue Mancuma.
Aha! I knew it!
Who did the voice of Tigatron.
Tigatron and Beast Wars, yep.
And Beast Wars, yep, so, among other things.
I knew I recognized... Oh, I gotta love Blue.
So, that's where you recognize that voice from. Yeah, like you said, it's the Masters against the Claw people, the Krabs, I guess.
Krabs.
But I like Decker. So Decker is a cool character. I think he has a good look for sure. I like the eye patch. I like the long white hair. It looks cool. It's kind of in comparison to the African-American skin tones and everything. So I think it's a cool look for a character. And I think it's decent character development for Man-at-Arms or Duncan.
Yep.
Kind of showing some of his backstory. So I like that part. That's the part of the episode that I like, is the interaction between the two of them and Decker's appearance. Just in general.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, Skeletor's in the series again. Barely. The cameo at the end. That's about it, though. I gotta come down a little bit negative on this episode, because I feel like this episode is out of place. I feel like this episode belongs in, like, the first handful of episodes of the series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't connect to any of the stuff that we've been seeing lately. It doesn't really have any of the other Masters, so to speak. It's got, you know, just one of the original villains, and it doesn't connect to what we saw with the Snake Pit or any of that mythology. So I feel like this backstory into Man-at-Arms should have come much earlier in the series, like maybe in the first 5, 6, 7 episodes, something like that. That thing, that monster that they summoned, the crab summoned,
the jellyfish, essentially,
the jellyfish, I think that thing looks stupid as hell. It has no form. I get it, it's a jellyfish, but it just, like, I don't know how it's walking. Is it hovering? Is it shooting, like, these 1,000,000,000 quills or darts at them? I didn't dig that. And I think my main problem was, so basically Man-at-Arms, spoiler alert here, Man-at-Arms gets shot with some of these darts, poison darts, quills, yep, whatever you want to call them. And at first he's like, you know, I'm fine, no big deal, I got armor on. But then it's proven to be that he actually did get hit with at least one of them, pierced his skin, and now he's dying because the stuff's super toxic, etc. And we need an antidote. And I think that's where the episode really lost it for me, because that was way too easy of a resolution. Like, they're like, oh, the antidote is in these pods that are, like, a bunch of miles away, like way far away in the southern hemisphere or something like that, they say.
But they float through.
But they float.
Yeah.
So we'll just go out in the water and we'll find one floating by and we'll grab it and then we'll save him. Like, that didn't work for me at all.
Okay, there's...
Well, I don't know about you.
There are two things in the episodes that we're talking about today that I kind of really dig, because... I dig more than these two things, but specific to what you're talking about, because they don't just, you know, have He-Man dig a, you know, cut around a mountain filled with water and throw it at something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So what you're talking about with him swimming out and whatever, I thought it was a little expositioning kind of thing, because, mm-hmm, hello, you have to fill the time for the episode. But it, right, also brings back to, like, you know, Duncan's, like, dying, and he's like, oh, the lessons, the poison. And Decker's like, I don't know what he's talking about. Teela's like, oh, I know what he's talking about, because I finally listened to my friggin' father. And, you know, and obviously He-Man knows, even though technically He-Man shouldn't know. He should, but he shouldn't let anyway.
Right.
Yada, yada, yada. I like that he actually went out. Like, he couldn't just, like, reach across the bar and grab this thing. He couldn't just, you know, go 5 miles down the road. He had to go other places. And then later, I don't think it's this episode. I think it's either the next one or the last one. He ends up cutting off part of the mountain with his sword.
Right.
Or part of whatever, and throwing it at one of the villains. I like that he actually cut it and didn't just, like, try to rip it out of the ground with his bare hands like they would do in 1983.
I think my problem with this one is, and they do make it seem like it's a little bit harder than, it's not super easy because they do kind of put him out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Ernie's swimming forever, and they just fill up a bunch of time with that. But, so, I mean, they made it seem not super simple, but my problem is at the point where they're discovering that there's these pods or there's this antidote and we're going to have He-Man save it. We know there's only like 5 minutes left in the episode. And it just wrapped up way too quickly and neatly for me. So I ended up not liking this episode as much as I thought I might. I don't know. I just think Decker deserved a better episode. I think they could have done something different with him. Instead of having Man-at-Arms, you know, incapacitated for a good portion of the episode, they could have had something where the two of them were doing something together. I don't know. Like, maybe I just don't like the crabs as the villain.
Yeah.
This episode just didn't, something about it just didn't work for me.
Yeah, I've never, even when I watched this, you know, when we did our original watch through 10 years ago or whatever it was, or however long ago it's been, and even before that, when I watched it on TV back when it was airing, I have never liked Clawful, and I have never liked his people. What's his name? Whiplash and the Spillians?
Right.
They're cool. Whiplash himself, and whatever, but the Spillian species, they're fine. They're cool. But the crab people, I'm like, okay, where in the hell is Mr. Krabs and some Krabby Patties? Because I'd rather deal with that than deal with these crab people.
Yeah, it also takes away from the fact that we already have Merman, and he's supposed to be kind of the king of the waters and things of that nature. So all these episodes that are involving Clawful and his species could have been Merman episodes, and I think I would have enjoyed that better.
Well, yeah.
Trivia-wise, Decker was released as an action figure by Mattel as part of their November 2012 Club Eternia subscription at the Maddie Collector website, so that is out there and obtainable if you want a figure of Decker. Don't know how much that costs these days, but it's out there. Any Havoc staffs or power swords for you, or any other final thoughts on the episode?
Final thoughts. Did you notice the little bit of continuity we did get for Man-at-Arms, Teela, and the Sorceress?
Yeah.
When he's on his deathbed, like, she has so much to be prepared for. She has so much to do in the future. Like, I thought that was kind of cool. The one thing I really did dig about this episode is the fact that they made Adam work for the transformation. He runs off into the cave. He's being chased by several of these crab people. He goes to pull the sword, and then through the water or through some reflection or what, I believe it's a small pond, a small puddle or whatever, he sees the reflection of the crab person, and he stops. He doesn't just pull his sword and change. He you know, runs away, and then, you know, finally gets a little privacy. I love the fact that Adam is the one that says teenagers. I thought that was hilarious. On a whole, though, this episode, while I do absolutely love it, while I do love Decker, Blue Man Kuma is an amazing voice actor. They're all amazing voice actors in this series, except, sadly, for Orko. Sorry, Gabe. But it's one of those things where this is very much, as you said earlier, it kind of feels out of place, especially after the last episode, or the last couple, with all the continuity. Havoc staffs, power swords. I'll give a power sword to Adam and He-Man because, like what I just said, I'll give a power sword to Decker because I think he's really cool. I want to see them in, like, him and Man-at-Arms in, like, a Indiana Jones and, you know, Dr. Jones kind of, you know, tied up kind of thing from Last Crusade or something.
Yeah.
Which they kind of were here, because they're like, oh, remember this? And then they start fighting. Tila's like, what the hell's wrong with you guys? And she doesn't get it. But
yeah. I just thought it would have been cool if they would have used it in some way to, like, have Decker reveal something about Man-at-Arms, or teach him something about his past, or, like, bring in something to, like, I don't know, a little bit more than they did.
Yeah.
So I still give a power star to Decker, though.
Yeah, very cool.
I think he's a cool character.
Yep. Rating for me... I know I'm going to have to choose, but I'm bordering on a 2.5 or a 3, and I'm just going to say a 3. It's middle ground at best. It's not as bad as, like, a 2.5 or below, but it's not, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of, you're borderline between 2.5 and 3. I'm borderline between 2 and 2.5. I just, like I said, it just didn't work for me, so I'm going to land on a, I put down 2, so I'll stick with that with what's on the paper here. I could see it being a tiny bit better by some people, but something about it just, I don't think I would, if I was like, okay, we're rewatching this for the second time now in our lives, all the way through it, at least, so I probably won't watch it all the way straight through again, but if I was to, like, pick it up and want to watch an episode, I don't think this would be the one that I would throw in.
Yeah.
So, that's it for this episode. We're going to take a break and come back with episode 23.
Lots of good stuff. Easy to carry, easy to sell. The evil warriors of Skeletor. These guys are like legends. Oh, Odifus, what you wouldn't give to be one of them.
Oh, Uncle Squiggly.
All right, next up today is episode 23, The Sweet Smell of Victory, or The Sweet Stink of Victory. Air date April 12, 2003, written by Kevin Campbell. Odifus, a petty Eternian criminal, witnesses the evil warriors victorious over the masters of the universe. That's a terrible plot synopsis. Basically, Odifus is a petty criminal, and he observes a battle between the evil warriors and the masters of the universe, and decides that he wants to become part of the evil warriors, and he goes to try to basically audition or see what that's all about, and then some crazy hijinks ensue and he's turned into a new character. What did you think of this origin story for Stinkor?
Finally, I know you have this in the trivia, but finally, the toy I had as a kid is actually in a cartoon series.
Yeah, voiced by Brian Drummond here, but just to get to that trivia here, this episode marks the first ever animated appearance of the character Stinkor, who was first introduced in the original Masters of the Universe toy line in 1985. So, a toy since 1985, not animated until this 2002 series. He was originally meant to be a part of She-Ra, Princess of Power in 1985, the TV series, as a member of the Evil Horde, but he was considered to be too silly of a character. So, considering the fact was basically a humanoid skunk character whose only power was that of releasing a horrible stench from his body. So, he was never used in the She-Ra series. Obviously, He-Man had already concluded its run at that point. So, so this is where we get him. He's introduced in this series and was given a backstory to why he retains his terrible smell. So, your toy was finally animated. What did you think of his backstory in this episode?
Man, I love it. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
We get, you know, I understand back then, way back when, you know, they weren't, you know, they didn't really want to do that. But, I mean, Hose Nose got an appearance in She-Ra. Like, Eternian Fireman, you know, or Ethereum Fireman, I should say, or whatever. They didn't just throw the character there to say, hey, you know, here's Stinkor, because Stinkor was a toy. Mm-hmm. They actually... I don't want to say they magical girl transformed him, but they kind of put a thing together where, like you said, it's a full-on character development thing. Like, he starts off as this one basically Luke-like character, and or honestly, he reminded me of a cross, even though it's not really a cross, between Luke and Imp from She-Ra.
I have a different comparison I'll make, but
more impish than Luke, but yeah, and then turning him into Stinkor, that's like, he just wants to
actually
be...
three levels of this, because you start with Oedipus, then he becomes Stinkor as a character, but without the armor that he eventually has in the final reveal as the evil warrior Stinkor. So once he gets his whole gear so that he can withstand his own smell and whatnot at the end, final scene of this or whatever. So kind of like three stages of his transformation, which I think is very cool.
Yeah.
And I like when they do that with characters where they have a different look or a different appearance than what we're used to, and then they kind of show how they get to where they are, the person we know. I think that's kind of fun. I mean, you're going to have some times where you're introducing a character and they immediately look exactly like we're supposed to see them, you know, like the toy looked or like we envisioned in our head. But I kind of like occasionally throwing in that curveball where it's like, oh, this isn't this person, and we learn how they become that person or how they get to that final look. Yeah. So I think that's cool. I like the voice work for Oedipus by Brian Drummond. I think that's pretty good. Do you know what it reminded me of?
What?
Oedipus to me was like the Gollum of He-Man.
Oh.
Or the Smeagol. Because he does have that like diminutive size, and he refers to himself in the first person, so he says his own name a bunch, and he's like, oh, Oedipus wants to do this or whatever, you know, and it's almost like Precious with Gollum or something like that. So that's who he reminded me of way before. Well, when did Lord of the Rings come out? It probably was coming out around the same time, so it might have been an influence of how he decided to do the voice for this.
Yeah, I don't know.
2000s, I mean, that's when Lord of the Rings was being released, so yeah. I don't. Oh, I would have to look at the exact dates to see if he could have possibly had that as an influence. But I like the character of Oedipus. Did you notice Roboto doing the moonwalking?
Yes, I did. I was actually going to mention that. And I'm like, hey, Roboto's doing an 80s move. That's kind of cool.
They went out of the way to like showcase his moonwalk backwards.
They went out of the way to have the camera down there.
Right. A couple other things I liked in the episode, Dutch. Cyclops took a major hit to his forehead where he has his power source or whatever you want to call it. So that was kind of interesting because it almost like damaged him pretty majorly for a second there.
And when it was damaged, just like Mechaneck, when Mechaneck's neck was damaged, when it was damaged, he realized, oh shit, I better not do this because if I do, I could hurt myself.
Right. There's some hilarious quotes in this episode. I don't know if you noticed any of them or not, but there's one from Oedipus where he says, I am Oedipus, and I have the power of stink. That's how he presented himself to Skeletor the first time, and I'm like, that's kind of funny. And then there's another line where Stratos says, he says the word something stinky, about the 14-minute mark or so. That was kind of funny the way he did that. I feel like the pacing was really good in this episode.
There was
very little moments of lulls, dead space, or filler. Like, they packed a lot into this episode. They have the whole Oedipus thing going on where he's observing all that type of stuff. Then they have a side story going on with Roboto, where he's kind of trying to deal with his different logic robotic parts, and if he's anytime he doesn't achieve success or doesn't do something right, it weighs more on him than others, I guess, because he's trying to figure out how his programming could allow him to fail or something of that nature. So they have a kind of a side story of that going on. So I thought that was interesting, and I thought it was a good choice to do that, obviously, with Roboto, since he is going to be the one character on the Masters that's not going to be prone to the smells. So it makes sense that he's going to be the master that we kind of focus on, and it was kind of cool seeing him be get kind of an episode where he's going to get some character development as well. What other things did you like?
Just everything about it. It was one of these... It was a good comical episode without being too corny or anything like that. There are, like you said, a couple of funny lines, but just, again, going for the character development versus just, hey, here's Oedipus who turns into Stinkhorn. He's the villain of the week, kind of. Like, when they were doing this show, they were not thinking in terms of what 80s and 90s cartoon villain of the week stuff. Well, like, they weren't thinking of what stupid plan can Miles Mayhem come up with this week, you know, right, kind of thing. As far as Lord of the Rings and its original three films, 2001, 2002, and 2003 were
Fellowship. Yeah, so this was in the height of that.
Yeah, Fellowship, Two Towers, and Return of the King. So who knows? Maybe you're right. Maybe that did influence Drummond if he saw those films.
Yeah, I just got a lot of that out of the voice experience.
Not
once he becomes Stink, or just no, the it's Oedipus
just
character.
It's just Oedipus.
Other good things, because I have a couple nitpicks.
Okay. I like that even though Roboto has his issues and he has his hang-ups on failing, I like that they highlight that and make him learn from that. Like, he has to go back to what Man-at-Arms said, you know, you don't dwell on your failures. Like, if I dwelled on the fact
that... I do like that it shows him his ability to replay things.
Exactly. That and learn things. Like, he's not just a robot to be a robot. He's not just, you know, an Optimus Prime or a Soundwave or whatever. He's there to learn and adapt. The hell was I going to say? So I like that. I don't know. What nitpicks do you have?
I'm going to go all Man of Steel on you here.
Oh, no.
For a second, or other complaints of like Marvel or stuff at times.
Oh boy.
Is it just me, or why do the Masters in this episode have no concern over what they destroy or what they demolish, whether it comes to buildings or doors or different things? So first we have in the opening sequence, you know, the evil warriors are fighting the Masters and Oedipus is watching and whatnot, and they're all doing their different things. Well, Roboto does the moon walk, and then he like unleashes like six different guns and just completely destroys this entire building, causing it to collapse and almost kill everybody. Like, and the problem I have with it is that, yes, they show that he's upset, but he's not upset because he overreacted and went crazy and ruined this whole building and almost hurt everybody. He's upset that he failed as far as the evil warriors getting away.
Yeah,
like, specifically says, I let them get away. Like, there should have been something about I overdid it, or you know, I didn't realize the bigger picture or something, or I'm sorry I put everybody in harm's way or something like that. Like, he went crazy in that episode, in that sequence. And then later on we have Ram Man trying to come in and warn Adam about something, I think is this character he's warning, and he just breaks down his door.
Yeah, he does.
Like, he doesn't open it, he doesn't do anything, he just breaks down. Which I get, he's Ram Man, that's his character, but it wasn't like it was saving somebody from a burning building or something like that. Like, there was, he could, I don't know, and it's like, oh, sorry about the door. So apparently the Masters don't give a shit about houses or construction or architecture. So I had a minor problem with that. My bigger problem, though, and why I'm going to knock this episode down just a touch, is... So eventually they come up with this plan, and Stinkhorn is going to go towards the palace, and he's going to be causing a diversion because everyone's going to have to be trying to run from him, etc. And while they're concentrated on Stinkhorn, Skeletor, and the other evil warriors are flying in, and they're going to take over the palace. All right. Well, we've already seen Stinkhorn at Snake Mountain with his smell, and immediately he had a mask that he put on. It was the same mask that Triclops was using when he was doing his, you know, experiments and building his inventions and stuff like that. So Stinkhorn puts that mask on so he can't smell, and then when he's in the main part of Snake Mountain, you see Skeletor and all of the other evil warriors also have similar masks that they put on. Mm-hmm. So they can talk to Stinkhorn. So we've already established that he stinks. We've already established that the evil warriors know about him. And we've already established that both Stinkhorn and the evil warriors are wearing masks to make sure that they're immune to the effects.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Fast forward. Stinkhorn is using his smell to affect all of, you know, the royal palace, all the guards, all the masters, etc. So we know that that's the plan. Stink up the place. Why are Skeletor and the evil warriors flying in without their masks on?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because they fly in on these animals.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they don't have their mask on, so then the smell starts to get to them, and they have to immediately retreat. Like, you already know he stinks. You already know you have masks. I don't understand. So I had a major problem with that. And then there was a flatulent sound at the end of the episode that was not originally planned, according to the trivia. It was a last-minute joke added by one of the editors, and the filmmakers thought it was so hilarious, and it remained in the episode. That was a bad decision. That was stupid. They didn't need stink or to fart at the end of the episode. So that was where it got a little bit cheesy and a little bit childish, where I could understand like that part, how they wouldn't want that in the original She-Ra or He-Man series, but this episode did a good job of not making the character cheesy or whatnot, and then they had to add that at the end, which I think not destroyed all their work, but it was like really, you're doing a pretty good job of not making him comical, and then you make him fart at the end. And it's the problem with that is also it's after he's revealed in kind of this badass gear and this badass outfit. So it's like, oh, now Stinkor has finally armored up, and here's his, like, we're gonna show a shot of him in all his glory, and then they're I have him fart.
Yeah, they should have had him fart way earlier.
So, yeah, it should have been like immediately at the beginning or something. I don't know. Like, so those are my problems. Any nitpicks for you or any Stink Mountain moments?
I don't know. I mean, I felt that the episode was...
It's still a good episode.
It's still a good episode. I actually... you gotta love technology, folks. Normally I watch these the night before we record or something, depending on how many episodes we have to record kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was dog-ass tired last night. I woke up at, I don't know, 5, 6 a.m. this morning, just rolled over, pulled my phone out, and went to YouTube on my phone and just watched all three of them on my phone without having to get up. Of course, you know, I still have to get the audio for the podcast, so I've watched these episodes 2 times within 7 hours. And both times I watched this episode, I still didn't feel like... I actually laughed at the fart at the end. Yes, I see where you're coming from, where it shouldn't have been there, because he is now supposed to be a more serious character.
Right.
But again, it's a character that evolved from a previously established character within the same episode. Like, take Adam and He-Man, for example. Two sides of the same character. Or take Batman and Bruce Wayne. You know, whatever, Superman, Clark Kent, whatever it is. You're still going to have glimpses of which... Like, if Superman's got his cape on and he's not being Clark Kent, there's still going to be a time when no one's really looking... that he's going to have some sort of Clark Kent tendency because he thinks he can get away with it. And I think that's, even though they say it was just a joke at the end, I think that's kind of like the Oedipus coming out, because even though he wasn't a stupid, silly character, he was kind of like this character that wanted to be super evil. He still had funny moments in the episode.
Yeah. Any Havoc Staffs or Power Swords or any other notes in this episode?
No, not really. I mean, I'll give a Power Sword to the writers and the staff, because I felt that they did this a hell of a lot more justice than it, like Kevin Campbell and whoever else worked on it.
Mm-hmm.
Taking the toy and crafting a whole story, like, that's some good shit right there. So I'll give the writing staff a Power Sword on that. Other than that,
I have a minor Havoc staff just to give to Roboto for not being conscious of what he's destroying.
Yeah.
Like, you're a good guy. You're not supposed to just be wanton shooting everybody and everything. So that was my only award to give out. What about a rating for you?
3.5. I kind of dug it.
I gave it a 3.5 too. I think it's a great origin episode for Stinklor. I think they do a pretty good job with it. There's some minor beefs. I don't like the fact that Skeletor and his minions don't have their masks on at the end, and that just causes the resolution to be very quick and unsatisfying. So that's what kind of caused me from not being up in that 4-4.5 range. So 3.5 for me as well. We're going to take a break, and we're going to see if we are united or separated when we come back with episode 24.
Much tasty.
You are the most disgusting.
disgusting! Now see what you've done!
Not my fault we share stomach. No, look at me!
Stinker wonders why you're always fighting! Aren't you happy to be an evil warrior? You've been inhaling too many of your own fumes, Stinkface! Being attached to this oversized wart is ruining my life! In that case, you should go see Stinker's old pal, Vormis, biggest dealer of spells and potions in the Dark Hemisphere! It was magic that fused us together. Stands to reason that...
Where we find this Vormis?
Stinker will take you there. That's okay.
We find him ourselves.
It looks bad, Your Majesty.
Courage, Duncan. We've never lost a battle to this enemy before.
Well, there's a first time for everything. Our move, Adam.
It seems our children have finally surpassed us.
Oh, it could have gone either way.
Got lucky.
Yes!
Last up today is episode 24, Separation, written April 19th, 2003. I think we know the writer. His name is Larry DiTilio. In an effort to separate themselves, Tuvar and Badra, still trapped in the single form of Tubad, seek out the three pieces of the Triad of Dissidium to try to separate. So this whole episode is about Tubad trying to separate back into their separate forms and the Triad of Dissidium, which is going to allow them to do that. What did you think about this plot in this episode?
Wow. Again, another episode with virtually no Skeletor.
Right.
You start out at Snake Mountain with them eating, arguing, whatever. You end with them eating, arguing, whatever in the middle. You have the entire Palace of Eternos, or the Eternium Palace, whatever the hell you want to call it, getting ready for the end of the world. And nobody in Snake Mountain notices this? Like, seriously? No one notices this at all? I love the obvious history, the obviously backstory for revealing why there is a light in a dark hemisphere. I think that is super cool.
Something about the game troubled you?
Seeing Prince Adam and Teela with their parents has brought back memories of my own family, now long gone.
My data tracks indicate this unit you call family constantly creates new members. Logically, some of your family should still exist.
You are right. I must seek out these new generations.
Try knocking, Sonny. We require...
Spell of Separation!
So you do. Well, just let me check the archives. Regeneration... Elevation. Here we are. Separation. The great spell of separation. Sounds like it'll do the trick. Requires three artifacts to be joined together at the Well of Darkness, and then... Oh my, no.
I cannot sell this at any price.
You got that right. Says here, the first artifact can be found on the ocean floor.
Ready, boy?
Prince Adam. He-Man is needed in Castle Grayskull at once.
Something big is up, Cringe. By the power of Grayskull!
The triad of Dissidium He-Man. Its tale has not been told for many years. Long ago, the triad was created by evil sorcerers at the command of the Dark Warlord, Hordak. He joined the pieces of the triad together, and the terrible spell of separation was cast. In a matter of minutes, darkness covered half the planet.
The creation of the light and dark hemispheres.
Yes. Hordak assumed his evil legions would thrive on the dark half and one day conquer the realm of light. But the energies he released proved too powerful. Realizing that even his own evil existence was in peril, Hordak commanded his minions to stop the spell. Though the triad was indestructible, they were able to separate the pieces, scattering them to the farthest corners of Eternia. Thus, the planet was saved from total devastation. The artifacts remained hidden and were eventually forgotten. But now someone has found the first piece and, I fear, seeks the other two.
But why? Even Skeletor isn't mad enough to destroy the whole planet.
The thief may not realize the true nature of the spell. But if he succeeds in reassembling the triad, our world is doomed.
Then succeed he won't.
It's in the trivia, but, you know, I can't help but mention, fucking Hordak, come on, damn it.
Whoever
this has nothing to do with Mike Young Productions or Dean Stefan or anybody that was working on the show, whoever the hell is at Cartoon Network and canceled this thing before they got to implement whatever the hell was going to happen in season 3, fuck those guys, because this show should have continued on. Damn yeah. it! I see
we'll
Hordak
get more to that later.
Well, obviously, yeah, much sure. later. But it's one of those things where I see Hordak now, and I'm like, oh damn it! So much lost potential. Ah! But this episode was super so cool.
Yeah, absolutely. The Triad of Dissidium, trivia-wise, that's Latin for division or separation. First appearance of Hordak in the new series, and the first time the origins of the Dark Hemisphere is revealed in the entire franchise. So, very interesting there. I think this is good for a couple different reasons. Number one, it's always good after a character makes their debut in a main episode, like we got with Stinkor in the last episode, mm-hmm. to then the following episode have them appear in like a small part or a cameo. I mm-hmm. think that's always good for continuity. So you get Stinkor here, who is basically telling Too Bad about somebody that knows a spell or knows, kind of tipping them off on how they might be able to separate. So I thought that was good use of Stinkor and adds continuity there. I have just Hordak in all capital letters with 4 exclamation points.
Exactly.
Because that was cool. You don't really get to see him do much. He has a laugh, and you get to see him basically creating the dark hemisphere, but that's about it. But it does kind of, it's an interesting point, and I can just imagine if you were watching the series in back in 2002, what it would have been like. You know, put yourself, or I guess this was April 2003, but put yourself back into 2003 if you're a He-Man fan and you've grown up on the Filmation series. Maybe you watched She-Ra, maybe you didn't, you know, regardless of if you watched New Adventures, who knows. But this series comes along and you're like, oh, an updated He-Man. I feel like that this is the moment in the series, you know, right here in episode 24, where your mind is going to be blown, because now it's a direct correlation with Hordak, which is a She-Ra character in the He-Man show. And I'm not saying that there wasn't intermingling in Filmation in the She-Ra series. Like, you got some little bits and pieces where Eternians were present.
Mm-hmm.
Or you had some connection there, but not in a He-Man show. And the idea that Hordak is this all-powerful being, or possibly more powerful than Skeletor, I mean, this moment just has to have your head spinning when you're watching this in 2003. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, like, ooh, Hordak, yay. This means the whole mythos is going to, you know, expand, and
right.
Sweet,
yeah,
because you know, and I don't know, but I'm just gonna say you as in quotation marks, you know that if they were able to continue, they would have brought in Etheria, they would have brought in the Rebellion, the Horde, we might have actually right. gotten a good version of Bo, because I'm sorry, the current, oh god, I can't Netflix, I just
don't
can't
be old man.
Oh, it's so horrible.
It's not. But it is. I also like that it's kind of wrapped up in this other plot, which is Too Bad trying to separate. Like, that makes sense for them to have that desire. They want to get away from each other. They used to be separate characters. Now they're conjoined. They don't want to be. So I think that's a completely logical plot to have. So it makes sense. It's not just a villain of the week. It's something that ties into their character. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like the funny fighting, infighting between them, especially when they're actually punching each other and stuff, like that's kind of hilarious. Or when one's eating something and the other one has to burp because of it. So I like all that. And I really didn't have any negatives. I don't think it's the best episode in the series or anything like that. I don't think there's enough to like put this over something like we saw last podcast with like Snake Pit or something like that. I don't think it's on that level, but there's nothing bad about the episode.
Yeah. It's getting there. It's getting to the point where right. we're not necessarily saying that we're like you most definitely won't, but I might. It's not getting to the point where we would give out consistent fives, but
right.
it's almost there. Like, you know, Snake Pit for me easily was a 5 last week.
Right.
This is more in the lines of, I'd say, a 3.5, maybe 4. I'll go 3.5 just to be on the safe side, but. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where we're starting to see the seeds of the future.
Right. I'm lockstep with you again. I'm 3.5. That's what I had written down for the Hordak appearance and for a decently plotted episode that kind of, you know, they didn't need some extra monster or some extra whatever. They're explaining the Dark Hemisphere and how that works. They're trying to save the world, so to speak. So, I don't know. I thought there was enough in this where 3.5 is where I landed. Not quite good enough to be in that 4 range, but just on the precipice.
Yep.
All right.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to let you know what's coming up next podcast. Whoa!
All right. That's it. New driver.
Agreed.
I'm Thomas DJ, top professional.
I'm Scott McGregor, talented amateur.
And we'd like to invite you to join us for our journey through every adventure of the Avengers.
No, not that Avengers. You won't find any tights, magic hammers, or fancy shields here.
But you We'll find some supervillains and some hot women in tight leather, so there is that.
And champagne.
Oh, yeah, lots of champagne.
With Umbrella Charm and Bowler, that other Avengers podcast, covering the seminal spy series that lasted from 1961 to 1969 on an episode-by-episode basis.
Join us as we explore the television series that helps shape pop culture and made an icon out of Diana Rigg, Honor Blackman, and Patrick Dean.
With Umbrella Charm and Bowler.
That other Avengers podcast, coming straight towards you every month.
Only on the Two True Freaks Podcast Network.
Do you like retro cartoons? Then Saturday Morning Rewind is the podcast for you. Join them each month as they talk about classic cartoons and interview legendary voice actors like Jim Cummings.
I am the terror that flaps in the night.
Corey Burton.
Sometimes toys can be so funny.
Rob Paulsen.
Sure, Blaine, but how are we going to find chaps our size?
Nancy Cartwright and many more.
Eat my shorts.
So grab a bowl of Lucky Charms.
They're magically delicious.
Put on your hammer pants. Go to SaturdayMorningRewind.com. And be prepared to feel like a kid again. Once again, that's SaturdayMorningRewind.com. Saturday Morning Rewind was voted best podcast ever by its host, Tim Nidell. So it's gotta be good.
Decian, the superhero webcomic. Decian's got superhero antics and sexy girls. For action, drama, mayhem, and more, read it now at Decian.com. DASIEN.com. And for the new Decian podcast, go to patreon.com/Decian.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk.
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Car.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
Whoa! How come the stinky guy isn't being punished too?
Because, unlike the rest of you, Oedipus has proved himself useful!
Oedipus? Who's Oedipus? Call me Stinkor!
We are back here in Masters of Grayskull, episode 115. That's going to do it for us. Any final thoughts, anything so far that we are almost pretty much done with season one of this series? Anything you want to tease for next time? Because that is our kind of final two episodes of season one of the He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
I'm just looking forward to it because we got a two-parter coming up and a two-part season finale, so to speak, and I think it's going to be this is where it kind of launches into season two and into the goodness that is the series even more than it has already.
Yep, absolutely. Same here. Thank you for listening, as we are the Masters of Grayskull. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on this and all of our other episode posts, written stuff, all that other good stuff. We don't have a lot of content going on right now because we all have lives that we're leading, and most of us have been doing this for 10 or 11 years, and some of us, me, are kind of getting burnt out a little bit. Not much, but we're still going strong. Go on and check out all of our other content that we got over there. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. iTunes has made some changes lately, supposedly on Mac devices and whatever. They're splitting up all the stores. I think on Windows it should be fine, but I'll have to check and see if we have any new feedback for next time. Follow us on Twitter, at GeekCastRadio is the show Twitter. You can also follow at Pow of Grayskull for our show. I am at TF2, and Mike, what is your Twitter?
At OptimusOlo.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to Facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork. We hope you enjoyed the Grayskull goodness today, and don't forget to join us in our next adventure when we will take a look at the next two episodes of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, which are The Council of Evil, Part 1 and 2. For now, I am TFG on Mike with
the great Optimus Olo.
Bullshit! By the power and for the honor of Grayskull, we have the power.
That was the stinky TFG on Mike.
You do realize I am the one that edits this shit, right? I can just edit that out.
Nah.
You know I will. I just cut it off. I circumcise you.
That's gross.
Teenagers.
What you doing, He-Man?
Practicing.
Why? You're He-Man. You're the best.
And practice helps me stay that way, Orko. You learn your lessons, and you put them into action. That's the key to success.
Gotta go.
Where to?
Gotta practice my magic. Until next time.